Is there a desire in you to not just attend revival, but live in revival? Welcome to the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Isaiah Saldivar. I've been in revival for the last 10 years, as well as traveling and being a part of many revivals throughout the United States. I'm going to be sharing with you how to live a radical lifestyle of revival on a daily basis. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to day number 23. You know, soon we're going to be saying day number 70, day number 80. That's crazy. It's a long 90 days is a long time. But today we are not on day 90. We're on day 23. We are trying to read the entire Bible. We're not trying. We are reading the entire Bible in 90 days every single day on live stream. I'm pretty sure we will be the first people to ever do the entire Bible live, at least on YouTube. There's no one else that has done it. So that's cool. That's exciting. And I've kind of changed my mindset. I told you guys this weeks back. The first week I was like, this is a burden. This is hard. This is a chore. And I've changed my mindset to this is a privilege to read the Bible. It's a privilege. I get to read. I don't have to do it. I get to read the Bible. I'm honored. I'm privileged. It's a reward that we're able to read God's word and his scripture. So have that mindset. Be excited about it. We are starting in 2 Samuel chapter 13, the rape of Tamar. And we are just starting Old Testament here. All right. This is how we start. I don't know what to tell you. So share this, like this. Send it to a friend and family. Encourage someone to join on this. And if you didn't join in day one, that's fine. You can join now. It doesn't matter. You can join at whatever point you want. So don't feel like, oh, I didn't start on day one. Jump in now. Jump in. The water's warm. You can jump in at any time. All right, here we go. Verse 1, chapter 13. Now David's son Absalom had a beautiful sister named Tamar. And Amnon, her half-brothers, fell desperately in love with her. Oh, her half-brother, not brothers. Yeah, sorry. Amnon became so obsessed with Tamar that he became ill. So, wow, okay, that's called love sick right there, brother. She was a virgin, and Amnon thought he could never have her. But Amnon had a very crafty friend, his cousin Jonadab. He was the son of David's brother Shimeah. One day, Jonadab said to Amnon, "What's the trouble? Why should we, son of a king, look so dejected after morning after morning?" So Amnon told him, "I'm in love with Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." Well, Jonadab said, "I'll tell you what to do. Go back to bed and pretend you're ill. When your father comes to see you, ask him to let Tamar come and prepare some food for you. Tell him you'll feel better if she prepares it as you watch and feeds you with her own hands." So Amnon lay down and pretended to be sick. And when the king came to see him, Amnon asked him, "Please let my sister Tamar come and cook my favorite dish as I watch. Then I can eat it from her own hands." Weirdo. So David agreed and sent Tamar to Amnon's house to prepare some food for him. When Tamar arrived at Amnon's house, she went to the place where he was lying down so he could watch her mix some dough. Then she baked his favorite dish for him. When she set the serving tray before him, he refused to eat. "Everyone get out of here," Amnon told his servant. So they all left. Then he said to Tamar, "Now bring the food into my bedroom and feed it to me here." So Tamar took his favorite dish to him. This is just so weird. But as she was feeding him, he grabbed her and demanded, "Come to bed with me, my darling sister." "No, my brother," she cried. "Don't be foolish. Don't do this to me. Such wicked things aren't done in Israel. Where could I go in my shame? And you would be called one of the greatest fools in Israel. Please, just speak to the king about it and he'll let you marry me." But Amnon wouldn't listen. And since he was stronger than she was, he raped her. He is a dirty scoundrel. Then suddenly Amnon's love turned to hate and he hated her even more than he loved her. "Get out of here," he snarled at her. "No, no," Tamar cried. "Sending me away now is worse than what you've already done to me." But Amnon would not listen to her. He shouted for a servant and demanded, "Throw this woman out and lock the door behind her." So the servant put her out and locked the door behind her. She was wearing a long, beautiful robe, as was the custom in those days for king's virgin daughters. But now Tamar tore her robe and put ashes on her head. And then, with her face in her hands, she went away crying. Her brother Absalom saw her and asked, "Is it true that Amnon has been with you?" "Well, my sister, keep quiet for now, since your brother's here. Don't worry about it." So Tamar lived as a desolate woman in her brother Absalom's house. When King David heard what had happened, he was very angry. Even though Absalom never spoke to Amnon about this, he hated Amnon deeply because of what he had done to his sister. 2 years later, when Absalom's sheep were being sheared at Baal Hazar near Ephraim, Absalom invited all the king's sons to come to a feast. He went to the king and said, "My sheep shears are now at work. Would the king and his servants please come to celebrate the occasion with me?" The king replied, "No, my son, if we all came, we'd be too much of a burden on you." Absalom pressed him, but the king would not come, though he gave Absalom his blessing. "Well then," Absalom said, "if you can't come, how about sending my brother Amnon with us?" "Why Amnon?" the king asked. But Absalom kept on pressing the king until he finally agreed to let all his sons attend, including Amnon. So Absalom prepared a feast fit for a king. Absalom told his men, wait until Amnon gets drunk. Then at my signal, kill him. Don't be afraid. I'm the one who has given the command. Take courage and do it. So at Absalom's signal, they murdered Amnon. Then the other sons of the king jumped on their mules and fled. As they were on the way back to Jerusalem, this report reached David. Absalom has killed all the king's sons. Not one is left alive. The king got up, tore his robe, and threw himself on the ground. His advisors also tore their clothes in horror and sorrow. But just then, Jonadab, the son of David's brother Shimeah, arrived and said, no, don't believe that all the king's sons have been killed. It was only Amnon. Absalom has been plotting this ever since Amnon raped his sister Tamar. No, my lord, the king. Your sons aren't all dead. It was only Amnon. Meanwhile, Absalom escaped. Then the watchman on Jerusalem wall saw a great crowd coming down the hill on the road from the west. He ran to tell the king, I see a crowd of people coming from Horonaim Road along the side of the hill. Look, Jonadab told the king, there they are now. The king's sons are coming just as I said. They soon arrived, weeping and sobbing, and the king and all the servants wept bitterly with them. And David mourned many days for his son Amnon. Absalom fled to his grandfather, Talma, son of Ammihud, the king of Geshur. He stayed there in Geshur for 3 years, and King David, now reconciled to Amnon's death, longed to be reunited with his son Absalom. Chapter 14. Joab arranges for Absalom's return. Joab realized how much the king longed to see Absalom, so he sent for a woman from Tekoa who had a reputation for great wisdom. He said to her, pretend you're in mourning, wear mourning clothes, and don't put on lotions. Act like a woman who's been mourning for the dead for a long time. Then go to the king and tell him a story I'm about to tell you. Then Joab told her what to say. When the woman from Tekoa approached the king, she bowed with her face to the ground in deep respect and cried out, O king, help me. What's the trouble? The king asked. At last, I'm a widow, she replied. My husband is dead. My two sons had a fight on the field, and since no one was there to stop it, one of them was killed. Now the rest of the family is demanding, let us have your son. We will execute him for murdering his brother. He doesn't deserve to inherit his family's property. They want to extinguish the only coal I have left, and my husband's name and my family will disappear from the face of the earth. Leave it to me, the king told her. Go home, and I'll see it to that no one touches him. Oh, thank you, my lord and king. The woman from Tekoa replied, if you are criticized for helping me, let the blame fall on me and on my father's house, and let the king and his throne be innocent. If anyone objects, the king said, bring him to me. I can assure you he'll never harm you again. Then she said, please swear to me by the Lord your God that you won't let anyone take vengeance against my son. I want no more, bloodshed. As surely as the Lord lives, he replied, not a hair on your son's head will be disturbed. Please allow me to ask one more thing of my lord the king, she said. Go ahead and speak, he responded. She replied, why don't you do as much for the people of God as you promised to do for me? You have convicted yourself in making this decision, but you've refused to bring home your own banished son. All of us must die eventually. Our lives are like water spilled out in the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. But God does not just sweep life away. Instead, he devises ways to bring us back when we've been separated from him. I've come to plead with my lord, the king, because people have threatened me. I said to myself, perhaps the king will listen to me and rescue us from those who have been cut off from the inheritance God has given us. Yes, my lord, the king will give us peace of mind again. I know that you're like an angel of God in discerning good from evil. May the Lord your God be with you. I must know one thing, the king replied, and tell me the truth. Yes, my lord, the king, she responded. Did Joab put you up to this? And the woman replied, my lord, the king, how can I deny it? Nobody can hide anything from you. Yes, Joab sent me and told me what to say. He did it to place the matter before you in a different light. But you're as wise as an angel of God, and you understand everything that happens among us. So the king sent for Joab and told him, all right, go and bring back the young man Absalom. Joab bowed with his face to the ground in deep respect and said, at last I know that I've gained your approval, my lord the king, for you've granted me this request. Then Joab went to Geshur and brought Absalom back to Jerusalem. But the king gave this order, Absalom may go to his own house, but he must never come into my presence. So Absalom did not see the king. Verse 25. Now Absalom was praised as the most handsome man in all of Israel. He was flawless from head to foot. He cut his hair only once a year, and only because it was so heavy. When he weighed it out, it came to 5 pounds. He had 3 sons and 1 daughter. His daughter's name was Tamar. She was very beautiful. Absalom lived in Jerusalem for 2 years, but he never got to see the king. Then Absalom sent for Joab to ask him to intercede for him, but Joab refused to come. Absalom sent for him a second time, but again, Joab refused to come. So Absalom said to his servants, go and set fire to Joab's barley field and the field next to mine. So they set his field on fire and as Absalom had commanded. Then Joab came to Absalom at his house and demanded, why did your servant set my field on fire? And Absalom replied, because I wanted to ask the king why he brought me back from Geshur if he didn't intend to see me. I might as well have stayed there. Let me see the king. If he finds me guilty of anything, then let him kill me. So Joab told the king what Absalom had said. Then at last David summoned Absalom, who came and bowed low before the king, and the king kissed him. Chapter 15. After this, Absalom brought a chariot and horses, and he hired 50 bodyguards to run ahead of him. He got up early every morning and went out to the gate of the city when people brought a case to the king for judgment. Absalom would ask where in Israel they were from, and they would tell him their tribe. Then Absalom would say, "You've really got a strong case here. It's too bad the king doesn't have anyone to hear it. If I wish I were the judge, then everyone could bring their cases to me for judgment, and I would give them justice." When the people tried to bow before him, Absalom wouldn't let them. Instead, he took them by the hand and kissed them. Absalom, a little sus. All right. Absalom did this with everyone who came to the king for judgment, so he stole the hearts of all the people of Israel. After 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Let me go to Hebron to offer a sacrifice to the Lord and fulfill a vow I made to him. For while your servant was at Geshur and Aram, I promised a sacrifice to the Lord in Hebron." "If you would bring him back to Jerusalem." "All right," the king told him. "Go and fulfill your vow." So Absalom went to Hebron. But while he was there, he sent secret messengers to all the tribes of Israel to stir up a rebellion against the king. "As soon as you hear the ram's horn," his message read, "you're to say, 'Absalom has been crowned king in Hebron.'" He took 200 men from Jerusalem as guests, but they knew nothing of his intentions. While Absalom was offering the sacrifices, he sent for Ahithophel, one of David's counselors who lived in Gilo. Soon many others joined Absalom, and the conspiracy gained momentum. A messenger soon arrived in Jerusalem to tell David, "All Israel has joined Absalom in conspiracy against you. Then we must flee at once, or it'll be too late." David urged his men, "Hurry. If we get out of the city before Absalom arrives, both we and the city of Jerusalem will be spared from the disaster." "We are with you," his advisors replied. "Do what you think is best." So the king and all his household set out at once. He left no one behind except 10 of his concubines that looked after the palace. The king and all his people set out on foot, pausing at the last house to let all the king's men move past to lead the way. There were 600 men from Gath who had come with David, along with the king's bodyguard. Over here. Then the king returned to Ataiah, a leader of the men from Gath. "Why are you coming with us? Go on back to King Absalom, for you're a guest in Israel, a foreigner in exile. You arrived only recently. Should I force you today to wander with us? I don't even know where we will go. Go on back and take your kinsmen with you, and may the Lord show you his unfailing love and faithfulness." But Ataiah said to the king, "I vow by the Lord and by your own life that I'll go wherever my Lord goes, no matter what happens, whether it means life or death." David replied, "All right, come with us." So Ataiah and all his men and their families went along. Everyone cried loudly as the king and his followers passed by. They crossed the Kidron Valley and they went out towards the wilderness. Zadok and all the Levites also came, carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. They sat down the Ark of God at Abiathar to offer sacrifices until everyone had passed to the city, passed out of the city. Then the king instructed Zadok to take the Ark of the God back into the city. "And if the Lord sees fit," David said, "he'll bring you back to see the Ark in the tabernacle again. But if he is through with me, then let him do what he sees best." The king also told Zadok the priest, "Look, here's my plan. You and Abiathar should return quietly to the city with you and your son Ahimaaz and Abiathar, son Jonathan. I will stop at the shallows of the Jordan River and wait there for a report from you." So Zadok and Abiathar took the Ark of God back to the city and stayed there. David walked up to the road of the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went. His head was covered, his feet were bare as a sign of mourning, and the people who were with him covered their heads and wept as they climbed the hill. When someone told David, his advisor, Ahithophel was now backing Absalom, David prayed, "O Lord, let Ahithophel give Absalom foolish advice." When David reached the summit of Mount Olives where people worship God, Hushai, the Archite, was waiting there for him. Hushai had torn his clothing and put dirt on his head as a sign of mourning. But David told him, "If you go with me, you'll only be a burden. Return to Jerusalem and tell Absalom, 'I will now be your advisor, O king, just as your father's advisor in the past.' Then you can frustrate and counter Ahithophel's advice. Zadok and Abiathar, the priests, will be there. Tell them about the plans being made in the king's palace. And they will send their sons, Ahimaaz and Jonathan, to tell me what is going on." So David's friend Hushai returned to Jerusalem, getting there just as Absalom arrived. Chapter 16. When David had gone a little beyond the summit of the Mount of Olives, Ziba, and by the way, guys, if you feel lost ever in these, that's totally normal, okay? There's a lot of stories intersecting here, and one story, then it cuts to another story, and then it's one paragraph of another story. It's not super, like, you know, in sync. So, and I'm talking about the boy band from 2000, but it's not like super synced up. So if you're confused about it a little bit, just stay on, hang in there, try to listen, try to read along. You'll understand, but it's a lot of storytelling. So some of this stuff is going to be a little bit hard to follow sometimes. But you can learn something in all of it. Okay, you can learn something in all of it. When David had gone a little beyond the summit of the Mount Olives, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, was waiting there for him. He had two donkeys loaded with 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of ravens, 100 bunches of summer fruit, and a wineskin of wine. "What are these for?" the king asked Ziba. Ziba replied, "The donkeys are for the king's people to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit are for the young men to eat. The wine is for those who become exhausted in the wilderness." "And where is Mephibosheth, Saul's grandson?" the king asked. "He stayed in Jerusalem," Ziba replied. He said, Today I will get back the kingdom of my grandfather Saul." In that case, the king told Ziba, "I give you everything Mephibosheth owns." "I bow before you," Ziba replied. "May I always be pleasing to you, my lord the king." As King David came to Bahurim, a man came out of the village cursing them. It was Shimeah, son of Gera, from the same clan as Saul's family. He threw stones at the king and the king's officers and all the mighty warriors who surrounded him. "Get out of here, you murderer, you scoundrel, you dirty rat," he shouted at David. "The Lord is paying you back for all the bloodshed in Saul's clan. You stole his throne, and now the Lord has given it to your son Absalom. At last, you'll taste some of your own medicine, for you are a murderer. Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king?" Abishai, son of Zeruiah, demanded. "Let me go over and cut off his head." "No," the king said. "Who asked your opinion, you sons of Zeruiah? If the Lord has told him to curse me, who are you to stop him?" Then David said to Abishai and to all his servants, "My own son is trying to kill me. Doesn't this relative of Saul have even more reason to do so? Leave him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him to do it. And perhaps the Lord will see that I'm being wronged and will bless me because of these curses today." So David and his men continued down the road, and Shimeah kept pace with them on a nearby hillside, cursing and throwing stones at the dirt and dirt at David. A little dirt cloud at David. The king and all who were with him grew weary along the way, so they rested when they reached the Jordan River. Meanwhile, Absalom and all the army of Israel arrived at Jerusalem accompanied by Ahithophel, which Absalom is David's son who is going to be at war with David pretty much, right? And this is all a result of David's sin with Bathsheba. The Lord said, now there's going to be like trouble in your household. When David's friends, Hushah, the Archite arrived, he went immediately to see Absalom. "Long live the king," he exclaimed. "Long live the king. Is this the way you treat your friend David?" Absalom asked. "Why aren't you with him?" "I'm here because I belong to the man who was chosen by the Lord and all the men of Israel," Hushai replied. "And anyway, why shouldn't I serve you? Just as I was your father's advisor, now I'll be your advisor." Then Absalom turned to Ahithophel and asked, "What should I do next?" Ahithophel told him, "Go and sleep with your father's concubines, for he has left them here to look over the palace. Then all of Israel will know that you've insulted your father beyond hope of reconciliation, and they'll throw their support to you." So they set up a tent on the palace roof where everyone can see. And Absalom went in and had sex with his father's concubines. Now, this is obviously disturbing and wrong. This is a result of, remember when God told David, now in public, what you did in private with Bathsheba will now be done to you in public for everyone to see. So that this is a prophecy being fulfilled of Absalom sleeping with King David's concubines because of what King David did in private. So just know, whatever you do in private, God will allow things to go public. This is the old New Testament reality. What you do in the dark will be brought to the light. You don't want it done in public or brought to the light, then don't have secret sin. Absalom followed Ahithophel's advice, just as David had done. For every word Ahithophel spoke seemed as wise as though it had come directly from the mouth of God. Chapter 17. Now Ahithophel urged Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men to start after David tonight. I will catch up with him while he's weary and discouraged. He and his troops will panic and everyone will run. Then I'll kill only the king. And I'll bring all the people back to you as a bride returns to her husband. After all, it's only one man's life that you seek. Then you'll be at peace with all the people." This plan seemed good to Absalom and all the elders of Israel. These people are wicked, turning on David like that. After all that he's done, you guys are just like, yep, let's do it. Let's kill him. That's so wrong. Shame on you. But then Absalom said, this Absalom character is a little dirty scoundrel, if I do say so myself. Sometimes the words just escape. But then Absalom said, "Bring in Hushah, the Archite. Let's see what he thinks about this." When Hushah arrived, Absalom told him what Ahithophel, they're just testing me with all these names, said. Then he said, "What's your opinion? Should we follow Ahithophel's advice? If not, what would you suggest?" "Well," Hushah replied to Absalom, "this time Ahithophel has made a mistake. You know your father and his men. They are mighty warriors. And right now, they're as enraged as a mother bear who's been robbed of her cubs. And remember that your father is an experienced man of war. He will not be spending the night among the troops." He is probably already hidden in some pit or cave. And when he comes out and attacks, a few of your men fall. There will be panic among your troops and word will spread and Absalom's men are being slaughtered. Then even the bravest soldiers, even though they have a heart of a lion, will be paralyzed with fear. For all of Israel knows what a mighty warrior your father is and how courageous his men are. I recommend that you mobilize the entire army of Israel, bringing them from as far as Dan in the north and Beersheba in the south. That way you'll have an army as numerous as the sand on the seashore. And I advise that you personally lead the troops. When they find David, he'll fall on them like dew that falls on the ground. Then neither he nor any of his men will be left alive. And if David were to escape into some town, you'll have all of Israel at your command. Then we can take some ropes and drag the walls of the town in the nearest valley until every stone is torn down. Then Absalom and all the men of Israel, they're literally plotting their own father's death. Absalom is, the little dirty guy. Hushai's advice is better than Ahithophel's. For the Lord had determined to defeat the counsel of Ahithophel, which really was better planned so he could bring disaster on Absalom. Hushai told Zadok and Abiathar the priests what Ahithophel had said to Absalom and the elders of Israel and what he himself had advised instead. Quick, he told them, find David and urge him not to stay at the shallows of the Jordan River tonight. He must go across at once in the wilderness beyond. Otherwise, he will die and his entire army with him. Jonathan and Ahimaaz have been staying the night at Engregal to not see the entering and leaving the city, to not be seen entering and leaving the city. Arrangements had been made for the servant girl to bring them the message they were to take to King David. But a boy was spotted at Enregal, and he told Absalom about it. So they quickly escaped to Baharim, where a man hid them down inside a well in the courtyard. The man's wife put a cloth over the top of the well and scattered grain on it to dry the sun, so no one suspected they were there. When Absalom's men arrived, they asked her, have you seen Ahimaaz and Jonathan? The woman said, they were here, but they crossed over the brook. Absalom's men looked for them without success and returned to Jerusalem. Then the two men crawled out of the well and hurried on to King David. Quick, they told him, cross the Jordan tonight. And they told him how Ahithophel had advised that he be captured and killed. So David and all the people with him went across the Jordan River during the night, and they were on the other bank before dawn. When Ahithophel realized that his advice had not been followed, he saddled his donkey and went to his hometown, set his affairs in order, and hanged himself. Wow, okay. He died there and was buried in the family's tomb. David soon arrived at Mahanaim. By now, Absalom had mobilized the entire army of Israel and was leading his troops across the Jordan River. Absalom had appointed Amasa as commander of his army, replacing Joab, who had been commander under David. Absalom and the Israelite army set up camp in the land of Gilead. When David arrived at Mount Mahanaim, he was warmly greeted by Shobi, son of Nahash, who came from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and by Maker, son of Amiel from Lodabar, and by Barzillai of Gilead from Rogalim. Man, these names, y'all, crazy. They brought sleeping mats, cooking pots, serving bowls, Chick-fil-A, wheat and barley, Wingstop, flour and roasted grain, beans, lentils, honey, butter, sheep, goats, Cheez-Its, David and those who were with him. They said, you must all be very hungry and tired and thirsty after your long march through the wilderness. Chapter 18. Oh, I love to read this. Absalom's defeat and death. That's good news. David now mustered the men who were with him and appointed generals and captains to lead them. He sent the troops out in three groups, placing one group under Joab, under Joab's brother Abishah, son of Zeruiah, and one under Ittiah, the man from Gath. The king told his troops, I'm going out with you. But his men objected strongly. You must not go, they urged. If we are to turn and run and even half of us die, it'll make no difference to Absalom's troops. They'll be looking only for you. You are worth 10,000 of us, and it is better that you stay here in the town and send help if we need it. If you think that's the best plan, I'll do it, the king answered. So he stood alongside the gate of the town as all the troops marched out in groups of hundreds of thousands. And the king gave this command to Joab, Abishah, and Ittiah. For my sake, deal gently with young Absalom. And all the troops heard the king give this order to his commanders. So the battle began in the forest of Ephraim, and the Israelite troops were beaten back by David's men. There were a great slaughter that day, and 20,000 men laid down their lives. The battle raged across the countryside, and more men died because of the forest than they were killed by the sword. During the battle, Absalom happened to come upon some of David's men. He tried to escape on his mule, but as he rode beneath the thick of branches of a great tree, his hair got caught in the tree, his mule kept going, and left him dangling in the air. One of David's men saw what had happened and told Joab, "I see Absalom dangling from a tree." What? Joab demanded. You saw him there and didn't kill him? I would have rewarded you with 10 pieces of silver and a hero's belt. I would not kill the king's son for even 1,000 pieces of silver, the man said. We all heard the king say to you, Abishah and Ittiah, for my sake, please spare my young Absalom. And if I had betrayed the king by killing his son, and the king would certainly find out who did it, you yourself would be the first to abandon me. Come on, bro. Enough of this nonsense, Joab said. Then he took three daggers and plunged them into Absalom's heart as he dangled, still alive in the great tree. 10 of Joab's young armor bearers then surrounded Absalom and killed him. Man, that is so brutal. Then Joab blew the ram's horn, and his men returned chasing the army of Israel. They threw Absalom's body in a deep pit in the forest and piled a great heap of stones over it, and all of Israel fled to their homes. During his lifetime, Absalom had built a monument to himself in the King's Valley, for he said, I have no son to carry on my name. He named the monument after himself and is known as Absalom's Monument to this day. Verse 19. Then Zadok, son of Ahimaaz, said, Let me run to the king with the good news that the Lord has rescued him from his enemies. No, Joab said, it wouldn't be good news to the king that his son is dead. Come on, bro. You can be my messenger another time, but not today. Then Joab said to a man from Ethiopia, Go tell the king what you've seen. The man bowed and ran off. But Ahimaaz continued to plead with Joab. Whatever happens, please let me go too. Why should you go, my son? Joab replied. There'll be no reward for your news. Yes, but let me go anywhere, he begged. Joab finally said, All right, go ahead. So Ahimaaz took the less demanding route by the way of the plain and ran to Mahanaim ahead of the Ethiopian. Oh, my eye itches so bad. While David was sitting between the inner and outer gates of the town, the watchman climbed to the roof of the gateway by the wall. As he looked, he saw a lone man running toward them. He shouted the good news down to David, and the king replied, If he's alone, he has news. As the messenger came closer, the watchman, I already know where this is going, the watchman saw another man running toward them. He shouted, Here comes another one. The king replied, He will also have news. The first man runs like Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, the watchman said. He's a good man and comes with good news, the king replied. Then Ahimaaz cried out, Everything is all right. He bowed before the king with his face to the ground and said, Praise the Lord your God, who has handed over the rebels who dared to stand against the Lord my king. What about young Absalom, the king demanded. Is he all right? Ahimaaz replied, When Joab told me to come, there was a lot of commotion, but I didn't know what was happening. Wait here, the king told him. So Ahimaaz stepped aside. Ahimaaz. I'm saying that right, I think. Then the man from Ethiopia arrived and said, I have good news, the Lord the king. Today the Lord has rescued you from those who rebelled against you. What about young Absalom, the king demanded. Is he all right? And the Ethiopian replied, May all of your enemies, my lord the king, both now and the future, share the fate of that young man. The king was overcome with emotion. He went up to the room over the gateway and burst into tears. And as he went, he cried, Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom. If only I had died instead of you, Absalom, my son. Now, remember, Absalom's the guy that's been trying to kill him, sleeping with all his concubines in front of everybody. But David had love for his son. Chapter 19, Joab rebukes the king. Word soon reached Joab that the king was weeping and mourning for Absalom. As the people heard the king's grief for his son, the joy of that day's victory was turned into deep sadness. They crept back into town as though they were ashamed and had deserted in battle. The king covered his face with his hands and kept on crying, Oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son. Then Joab went to the king's room and said, We saved your life today and the lives of your sons, your daughters and your wives and concubines. You act like this, making us feel ashamed of ourselves. You seem to love those who hate you and hate those who love you. You've made it clear today that your commanders and your troops mean nothing to you. It seems that if Absalom had lived and all of us died, you would be pleased. Well, now go out there and congratulate your troops. For I swear by the Lord that if you don't go out, not a single one of them will remain here tonight. Then you'll be worse off than ever before. The king went out and took a seat on the town gate, and then the news spread throughout the town that he was there. Everyone went to him. Meanwhile, the Israelites who had supported Absalom fled to their homes. And throughout all the tribes of Israel, there was so much discussion and argument going on. The people were saying, The king rescued us from our enemies and saved us from the Philistines, but Absalom chased him out of the country. Now Absalom, who we anointed to rule over us, is dead. Why not ask David to come and be our king again? Then King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar the priests to say to the elders of Judah, Why are you the ones to welcome back the king into his palace? For I've heard that all of Israel is ready. You are my relatives, my own tribe, my own flesh and blood. So why are you the last ones to welcome back the king? And David told him to tell Amasa, Since you're my own flesh and blood, like Joab, may God strike me and even kill me if I don't appoint you as commander of my army in this place. Then Amasa convinced all the men of Judah, and they responded unanimously. They sent word to the king, Return to us and bring back all who are with you. So the king started back to Jerusalem. And when he arrived at the Jordan River, the people of Judah came to Gilgal to meet him and escort him across the river. Shimeah, son of Gera, the man from Baharim, and Benjamin hurried across with the men of Judah to welcome King David. 1,000 other men from the tribe of Benjamin were with him, including Ziba, the chief servant of the house of Saul. And Ziba's 15 sons and 20 servants, they rushed down to the Jordan to meet the king. They crossed the shallows of the Jordan to bring the king's household across the river, helping him in every way they could. As the king was about to cross the river, Shimei fell down before him. "My lord, my king, please forgive me," he said. "Forget the terrible thing your servant did when he left Jerusalem. May the king put it out of his mind. I know how much I've sinned. That is why I've come here today, to be the very first person in all of Israel to greet the Lord my king." Then Abisha, son of Zeruiah, said, "Shimei should die, for he cursed the Lord's anointed king." "Who asked your opinion, you son of Zeruiah?" David exclaimed. "Why have you become my adversary today? This is not a day for execution, for today I'm once again the king of Israel." Then turning to Shimei, David vowed, "Your life will be spared." Now Mephibosheth, Saul's grandson, came down from Jerusalem to meet the king. He had not cared for his feet, trimmed his beard, or washed his clothes since the day the king left Jerusalem. "Why didn't you come with me, Mephibosheth?" the king asked him. Mephibosheth replied, "My lord, the king, my servant Ziba deceived me. I told him, saddle my donkey so I can go with the king, for you know I am crippled. Ziba has slandered me by saying that I refuse to come. But I know that my lord, my king, is like an angel of God, so do what you think is best. All of my relatives and I can only expect death from you, my lord, but instead you've honored me by allowing me to eat at your own table. What more can I ask?" "You said enough," David said. "I've decided that you and Ziba will divide your land equally between you." I give him all of it, Mephibosheth said. "I'm content just to have you safely back again, my lord the king." Barzillai of Gilead had come down from Rogalim to escort the king across the Jordan. He was very old, 80 years of age, and very wealthy. He was the one who provided food for the king during his stay at Mahanaim. Come across with me and live in Jerusalem, the king said to Barzillai. "I will take care of you there." "No," he replied, "I'm far too old to go with the king to Jerusalem. I'm 80 years old today, and I can no longer enjoy anything. Food and wine are no longer tasty, and I cannot hear the singers as they sing. I would only be a burden to my lord the king. Just go across the Jordan River with the king and all the honor I need. Then let me return again to die in my own hometown. There my father and mother are buried. Here's your servant, my son Kimham. Let him go with my lord the king and receive whatever you want to give him." "Good," the king agreed. "Kimham will go with me and will help me in any way you would like, and I'll do for anything you want." So all the people crossed the Jordan, and the king, after David had blessed Barzillai and kissed him, Barzillai returned to his own home. The king then crossed over to Gilgal, taking Kimham with him. All the troops of Judah and half the troops of Israel escorted the king on his way. But all the men of Israel complained to the king, "The men of Judah stole the king and didn't give us honor of helping or to take your household, all your men across the Jordan." The men of Judah replied, "The king is one of our very own kinsmen. Why would this make you angry? We haven't eaten any of the king's food or received any special favors." "But there are 10 tribes in Israel," the others replied, "so we have 10 times as much right to the king as you do. What right do you have to treat us with such contempt? Weren't we the first to speak of bringing him back to our king again?" The argument continued back and forth, and the men of Judah spoke even more harshly than the men of Israel. Chapter 20, The Revolt of Sheba. There happened to be a troublemaker there named Sheba, son of Bichri, a man from the tribe of Benjamin. Sheba blew a ram's horn and began to chant, "Down with the dynasty of David! We have no interest in the son of Jesse. Come on, you men of Israel, back to your homes!" So all the men of Israel deserted David and followed Sheba, son of Bichri. But the men of Judah stayed with their king and escorted him from the Jordan River to Jerusalem. When David came to his palace in Jerusalem, he took 10 concubines he had left to look over the palace and placed them in seclusion. Their needs were provided for, but he no longer slept with them. So each of them lived like a widow until she died. Then the king told Amasa, "Mobilize the army of Judah within 3 days and report back at that time." So Amasa went out to notify Judah, but it took him longer than the time he'd been given. Then David said to Abisha, "Sheba, son of Bichri, is going to hurt us more than Absalom did. Quick, take my troops and chase after him before he gets into a fortified town where we can't get him." So Abisha and Joab went together with the king's bodyguard and all the mighty warriors and set out from Jerusalem to go after Sheba. As they arrived at the gate stone in Gibeon, Amasa met them. Joab was wearing his military tunic with the dagger strapped to his belt. As he stepped forward to greet Amasa, he slipped with a dagger from his sheath. "How are you, my cousin?" Joab said, and took him by the beard with his right hand as though to kiss him. Amasa didn't notice the dagger in his left hand, and Joab stabbed him in the stomach with it, so his insides gushed out onto the ground. Joab did not need to strike again, and Amasa soon died. Joab and his brother Abisha left him lying there and continued after Sheba. One of Joab's young men shouted to Amasa's troops, If you are for Joab and David, come and follow Joab. But Amasa laid in his blood in the middle of the road, and Joab's men saw that everyone was stopping to stare at him. So he pulled him off the road into a field and threw a cloak over him. With Amasa's body out of the way, everyone went on with Joab to capture Sheba, son of Bichri. Meanwhile, Sheba traveled through all the tribes of Israel and eventually came to the town of Abelabeth-Maacah, and all the members of his own clan, the Bichrites, assembled for battle and followed him into town. When Joab's forces arrived, they attack Abel Beth Maka. They built a siege ramp against the town fortification and a battering ram down the wall and begin battering down the wall. But a wise woman in the town called out to Joab. "Listen to me, Joab. Come here so I can talk to you." As he approached, the woman asked him, "Why are you Joab?" "I am," he replied. So she said, "Listen carefully to your servant." "I'm listening," he said. Then she continued, "There used to be a saying, if you want to settle an argument, ask for advice at the town of Abel. I am the one who is peace loving and faithful in Israel, but you are destroying an important town in Israel. Why do you want to devour what belongs to the Lord?" And Joab replied, "Believe me, I don't want to devour or destroy your town. That's not my purpose. All I want is a man named Sheba, son of Bichri from the hill country of Ephraim, who has revolted against King David. If you hand over this man to me, I'll leave the town in peace." "All right," the woman replied, "we'll throw his head over the wall to you." Then the woman went to all the people with their wise advice, and they cut off Sheba's head and threw it out to Joab. So he blew the ram's horn and called his troops back from the attack, and they all returned to their homes, and Joab returned to the king of Jerusalem. Now Joab was the commander of the army of Israel. Benna, son of Jehoiada, was captain of the king's bodyguard. Adoniram was in charge of forced labor. Jehoshaphat, son of Ahilud, was the royal historian. Sheva was the court secretary. Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. And Ira, a descendant of Jair, was David's personal priest. Chapter 21, David avenges the Gibeonites. There was a famine during David's reign that lasted for 3 years. So David asked the Lord about it, and the Lord said, "The famine has come because Saul and his family are guilty of murdering the Gibeonites." The king summoned the Gibeonites. They were not part of Israel, but were all that was left of the nation of the Amorites. The people of Israel had sworn not to kill them, but Saul, in his zeal for Israel and Judah, had tried to wipe them out. Remember, the Gibeonites were the ones that deceived them, and Israel made a covenant with them. Saul tried killing them, which broke the covenant, which caused basically a curse to come upon them, or to come upon the land. David asked them, "What can I do for you? How can I make amends so you'll bless the Lord's people again?" "Well, money can't settle this matter between us and the family of Saul," the Gibeonites replied. "Neither can we demand the life of anyone in Israel." "What can I do then?" David said. "Just tell me and I'll do it for you." Then they replied, "If it was Saul who planned to destroy us, to keep us from having any place in all the territory of Israel, so let 7 of Saul's sons be handed over to us and we'll execute them before the Lord at Gibeon, at the mountain of the Lord." "All right," the king said, "I'll do it." Guys, your choices will have consequences on your kids. This is all through scripture. The king spared Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth, who was Saul's grandson because of the oath David and Jonathan had sworn before the Lord. But he gave them Saul's 2 sons, Armoni and Mephibosheth, whose mother was Ribsah. Wait, didn't it just say he spared him? But he gave them Saul's 2 sons, Ribsah, son of... He also gave them 5 sons of Saul's daughters, Merab, the wife of Adriel, son of Barzillel from Mahalalel. The men of Gibeon executed them on the mountain before the Lord. So all 7 of them died together at the beginning of the barley harvest. Then I'm confused. It says that he gave them Mephibosheth, but then here it says he spared Jonathan's son Mephibosheth. Oh, so Jonathan had a son named Mephibosheth and Saul. Okay, that makes sense. All right. Then Rizpah, daughter of Ai, the mother of the 2, spared burlap on a rock and stayed there the entire harvest season. She prevented the scavengers and birds from tearing at their bodies during the day and stopped wild animals from eating them at night. Then David learned what Rizpah, Saul's concubine, had done. He went out to the people of Jabesh Gilead and retrieved the bones of Saul and his son Jonathan. When the Philistines had killed Saul and Jonathan on the Mount Gilboa, the people of Jabesh Gilead stole their bodies from the public square of Bethshan, where the Philistines had hung them. So David obtained the bones of Saul and Jonathan, as well as the bones of the men of the Gibeonites had executed. Then the king ordered that they buried the bones in the tomb of Kish, Saul's father, and the town of Zelah in the land of Benjamin. After that, God ended the famine in the land. Okay, got it. Verse 15. Once again, the Philistines were at the war with Israel. And when David and his men were in the thick of battle, David became weak and exhausted. Ishbib-benob was a descendant of the giants. His bronze spear had weighed more than 7 pounds, and he was armed with a new sword. He had cornered David and was about to kill him. But Abishah, son of Zeruiah, came to David's rescue and killed the Philistine. Then David's men declared, "You're not going out to battle with us again. Why risk snuffing out the light of Israel?" After this, there was another battle against the Philistines at Gob. As they fought, Sibekah from Husha killed Saph, another descendant of the giants. During another battle at Gob, Elhanah, son of Jair, from Bethlehem, killed the brother of Goliath of Gath. The handle of his spear was as thick as a weaver's beam. We know that weaver's beams are thick. In another battle with the Philistines at Gath, they encountered a huge man with 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot. 24 in all, who was also descendant of the giants. But when he defiled and taunted Israel, he was killed by Jonathan, the son of David's brother Shimea. These four Philistines were descendants of the giants of Gath, but David and his warriors killed them. Chapter 22. David's Song of Praise. David sang this song to the Lord on the day the Lord rescued him from his enemies and from Saul. He sang, "The Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my savior. My God is my rock, in whom I find protection. He is my shield, the power that saves me, and my place of safety. He's my refuge, my savior, the one who saves me from violence. I called on the Lord, who is worthy of praise, and he saved me from my enemies. The waves of death overwhelmed me. Floods of destruction swept over me. The grave wrapped its robes around me. Death laid a trap in my path. But in my distress, I cried out to the Lord. Yes, I cried to my God for help. He heard me from his sanctuary. My cry reached his ears. Then the earth quaked and trembled. The foundations of the heavens shook. They quaked because of his anger. Smoke poured from his nostrils. Fierce flames leaped from his mouth. Glowing coals blazed forth from him. He opened the heavens and came down. Dark storms cloud were beneath his feet. Mounted on a mighty angelic being, he flew soaring on the wings of the wind. He shrouded himself in darkness, veiling his approach with dense rain clouds. A great brightness shone around him, and burning coals blazed forth. The Lord thundered from heaven. The voice of the Most High resounded. He shot arrows and scattered his enemies. His lightning flashed, and they were confused. Then at the command of the Lord, the blast of his breath, the bottom of the sea could be seen, and the foundations of the earth were bare. He reached down from heaven and rescued. This is powerful because this is out of the breath of his nostrils. He split the Red Sea. That's what this is talking about. That's crazy. The blast of his nostrils, the bottom of the sea can be seen. God literally went, and the Red Sea split. That's how powerful God is. He reached down from heaven and rescued me. He drew me out of deep waters. He rescued me from my powerful enemies, from those who hated me and were too strong for me. They attacked me at the moment when I was in distress, but the Lord supported me. He led me to a place of safety. He rescued me because he delights in me. The Lord rewarded me for doing right. He restored me because of my innocence, for I kept the ways of the Lord. I've not turned from my God to follow evil. I have followed all of his regulations. I've never abandoned his decrees. I'm blameless before God. I've kept myself from sin. The Lord rewarded me for doing right. He's seen my innocence." I could tell that David wrote this song. "To the faithful, you show yourself faithful. To those with integrity, you show integrity. To the pure, you show yourself pure. But to the crooked, you show yourself shrewd. You rescue the humble, but your eyes watch the proud and humiliate them. O Lord, you are my lamp. The Lord lights up my darkness. In your strength, I can crush an army. With my God, I can scale any wall. God's way is perfect. All the Lord's promises prove true. He's a shield for all those who look to him for protection. For who is God except the Lord? Who but our God is a solid rock? God is my strong fortress, and he makes my way perfect. He makes me as sure-footed as a deer, enabling me to stand on mountain heights. He trains my hand for battle. He strengthens my arm to draw a bronze bow. You've given me your shield of victory. Your help has made me great. You've made me a wide path for my feet to keep them from slipping. I chased my enemies and destroyed them. I did not stop until they were conquered. I consumed them. I struck them down as they did not get up. They fell beneath my feet. You've armed me with the strength for battle. You've subdued my enemies under my feet. You placed my foot on their necks, and I've destroyed all who hate me. They looked for help, and no one came to the rescue. They even cried to the Lord, but he refused to answer. I ground them as fine dust of the earth. I trampled them in the gutter like dirt. You gave me victory over my accusers. You preserved me as the ruler over nations. People I don't even know now serve me. Foreign nations cringe before me. As soon as they hear of me, they submit. They all lose their courage and come trembling from their strongholds. The Lord lives. Praise to my rock. May God, the rock of my salvation, be exalted. He's the God who pays back those who harm me. He brings down the nations under me and delivers me from my enemies. You hold me safe beyond the reach of my enemies. You save me from violent opponents. For this, O Lord, I will praise you among the nations. I will sing praises to your name. You give great victories to your king. You show unfailing love to your anointed, to David and to all his descendants forever." Amen. Praise the Lord. We are done, guys. We are on 2 Samuel chapter 23 starting tomorrow. We'll be live with 2 Samuel chapter 23. We are moving through, guys. Please let me know how you enjoyed today. Today is pre-recorded, and I'm airing it live because every Sunday we pretty much are going to be pre-recording. Last Sunday I was live, but Sundays is our Sabbath day. We go to church, we get lunch, we hang out with the kids, and we just rest. So Sundays, pretty much most of the time, unless I state otherwise, will be recorded and then aired live. But every other day that I'm home, I'm doing lives. I'm rarely pre-recording and airing them like this, only when I absolutely have to. There's some days where I just am not home at 2 o'clock. If I'm traveling, if I'm doing things. So yeah, but 90%+ are live. And then I will, if you don't see me engaging with the chat, looking at the chat, it's probably pre-recorded. I pre-record it. All right. I love you guys all so much. Thank you guys so much for supporting and being a part. You can partner down below. Our monthly partner prayer calls are Thursday at 1 p.m. So if you monthly partner with this link, support link here or in the description, you'll get invited to our weekly monthly partner prayer call. So every week, Thursday at 1 p.m., we get together and we pray and have a great time. I love you guys. Please be praying for our family. My wife is extremely sick still. She's had such a rough recovery. She's been sick for almost 2 weeks. And it's been rough. She's been in bed, just sick. She's just very sick. So I'm trying to hold down the fort. We've had family helping us with the kids, and it's been a test. Let's just say it that way. So be praying for my wife.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. If you like what you heard, go to www.isaiahsaldivar.com for more content. And please follow me on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram @Isaiah Saldivar. See you next week.